Register readers out there, this is Ashley Vance here with an exclusive audio interview. Today's guest is Mario Panaccia, a research director at Intel who specializes in silicon photonics. This is a new networking area that Intel hopes to own in the coming months, and we wrote a story on January 27th about Mario's group called Intel Cranks Up Next Gen Chip-to-Chip Play. This interview should add some detail to that story and give Intel a shot at touting some of its R&D muscle. Listen at your own risk. The whole show runs about 15 minutes.
Mario, I was hoping you could give our readers just a sense of what you're doing over at Intel these days.
So I currently am the director of the Photonics Technology Lab here at Intel. And what we've been working on the last couple of years is trying to build optical devices, or demonstrate we can build optical devices using standard silicon and silicon processing, the same processing that's done with our standard microprocessors today, very similar. And the idea is that if you look at optical communications today, it's predominantly made of what we call exotic materials.
Right.
Non-silicon-based materials. They're bulky, they're big, and they're discrete. And that leads to very expensive technology. The idea is if we can integrate that onto a silicon platform, just like we've done with Moore's Law over the last 30 years, integrate more functionality, integrate these components together, at the end is a way to change the way optical communications is done in the future.
Right, and along those lines, you guys have enjoyed, I guess, two or three really large breakthroughs the last couple of years with the laser and then upping the speed on your modulator?
Yeah, and I think these breakthroughs sort of do two things, right? One is, in some sense, they're psychological, in the sense that, they're such big leaps, and they're demonstrating that people, I didn't realize you could do that. In terms of, we demonstrated the first silicon laser operating continuous wave in 2005, and that was something no one thought was possible. A year later, we then demonstrated an electrically pumped hybrid silicon laser. 2 years ago, or now 3 years, the fastest modulation in silicon was 20 megahertz. We went public in 2004 with modulation in silicon at a gigahertz. A year later, we pushed that to 10 gigabits per second. And then just this past month, we pushed that to 30 gigabits per second. That's three orders of magnitude performance improvement in less than 2.5 years, which gives you an idea of the rate of advancements that are happening in this field.
Right. And then, 40 gigabits is, you guys think, kind of with your current technology, you can squeeze 40 gigabits out of it, and that'll bring you pretty much right on par with what you call the exotic devices used today, right?
We're within shooting distance of 40 gigabits, and now we've taken silicon to, previously it was, you'll never do that in silicon, to now comparable performance to the leading edge technology that you can buy commercially today with only the exotic materials. And, these are sea changes. These are, maybe the word disruptive is overused, but these are game-changing things that allow you to bring a technology, with orders of magnitude, cost reduction, and allows you to apply this, which is the real important thing here, to places where you predominantly didn't think you could apply optical to.
Yeah, and so tell us again with the price. I have in one of my stories I did that a non-silicon modulator today costs around $8,000. Is that correct for the kind of stuff we're talking about?
If you look at a 40 gig modulator today, it's typically lithium niobate. And when we talk about cost, I think when we did that interview, I signed the purchase order, but we're talking $5,000, $6,000, $7,000, $8,000 just for the modulator.
Right.
It doesn't include the expensive drive you need. It's very big. It's about 3 inches. So you can never imagine not only the cost, but at 40 gigabits, how would you ever put that in and around the PC, let alone if you want to put 25 or 50 of them? And, if we want to drive this technology, and our long-term goal and vision this past week we announced this Polaris test chip that had 80 cores functional.
Sure.
You know, in the future, we're talking about terabits of communication on a single chip, hundreds of cores, terabits of information going in and out of those cores, and you're going to need ways to move terabits of information. And we're talking in the future of putting a terabit optical chip together to connect and communicate between these future processors.
So where do we need to get the cost down to, you know, maybe not at the kind of terabit chip level, but some of the earlier applications like rack-to-rack communications, what would be a practical price point for these devices?
It's not so much just the price, but, you know, we got to continually, just like in the rest of the industry, we will continue to drive more performance at either the same price or continue to reduce the price. So, you know, today, 10 gigabit transceivers are typically around $100. You know, that's slowly coming down. You know, if you want to drive that to the extreme side on the interconnect side, it's at least an order of magnitude cheaper, if not more. So, again, depending on the data rate and the application, but, you know, we want to get this eventually long-term into the dollars.
Right.
And that's the PC environment, that's the PC economics, and that's, you know, the end game that we're trying to shoot for.
And then, and you guys, you and I talked a little bit about how we're looking first at rack-to-rack, and then server-to-server, and then eventually chip-to-chip communications with this optical technology. In Intel's labs today, are you kind of running tests along all three of those kind of large buckets there?
So we have, there's sort of, as you came through the lab, you know, there's the activity just focused on the device performance. Prove we can build these devices, optimize them individually, modulators, detectors, lasers. Then there's the ability to integrate those together. And then there's the piece that, how do we package these? How do we integrate those into systems? And in the lab, we're looking at both. We have a communications business here at Intel that predominantly deals with the longer distance applications. How do we work with our business units internally? And then also in the server environment, looking at backplanes, looking at servers, rack to rack, and then even looking at some implementations and issues with putting optical into platforms for chip to chip.
Right, because, I mean, you guys are, like I saw at the lab, I mean, already kind of looking at, you know, right on the board communications, even though, you know, I stress it's all very much research at this point.
Yeah, I mean, you have to address the issues. So, you know, the implementation of optical communications will be based on the right technology at the right price point, at the right intercept point. You know, I, as the lab director, have to be working on technology, and I view it as I give the architects here an option. So for every generation or new architecture, you know, we want to give them an option to take on this new technology. And that's, if you look at it that way, it's not copper versus optical. There are options at different points in time. Obviously, the longer distances are much more difficult to communicate over copper, and it's becoming more challenging. So the natural intercept sooner will be at the longer distances when you're talking a couple meters. And then over time, as you get closer and closer and shorter distances and higher data rates, then the crossover point varies.
It's, you know, if everything goes according to plan and it's kind of a best-case scenario and Intel really does have a game-changing device here, you know, I mean, what, like I said, this is a best-case scenario. What does that do for Intel from kind of a business perspective with your, you know, networking products? And
well, I mean, it's hard to say. Well, that's from a business perspective in terms of, you know, revenue. But it's, you know, obviously at the end of the day, it's about shipping value to the customer, and that value could come into new technologies, into new marketplaces. That value could be enabling new technologies into future platforms, where platforms now benefit because you have this way to communicate optically between the servers and backplanes and memory, and now you have much better performance for the same price. So it's hard to put, you know, at the end of the day, it's about, you know, increasing performance per watt, performance per size, and so that the end customer at the end wins.
But, you know, I mean, in the past we've seen Intel kind of go after some new businesses outside of PC chips and server chips. And, you know, you've had success, like any large company, success in some areas and a few failures in others. I just noticed that in communications in particular, it seems like you guys might do well in one segment. And then I think last year you sold off part of your optical networking business. So that obviously wasn't working out just exactly as planned. You know, I'm trying to get a sense as to whether the research you're doing with silicon photonics could really kind of put Intel at a new level with this kind of products, or, you know, bring some of the research and development stuff you're so well known for in processors to networking, or would it just be more of a continuation of the efforts you're doing today?
Does that make sense? Yeah, I have a question. You know, competition is competition, right? And, you know, we have competition today in the microprocessor business and in these other businesses. You know, nothing stays dormant. And so when you go into a new business, you know, it's not about who you are, it's about what technology you have and how you're competing with others. And so, you know, in this terms of technology, I think there's multiple applications. And when you came to the lab, there's the standard, you know, let's call it applications where we're delivering optical technologies to our platform, and that brings value. There's applying this technology into the communication space, where now we can bring new technologies, new form factors. You know, the ability to integrate multiple of these photonic devices could clearly change the way you do communications out in the WAN and the enterprise, and even in the 10 kilometers longer distances. And then there's, as I showed you, you know, you can also apply this technology into new areas, right? Bio, lab on a chip, wireless, where now you have the ability to bring optical, low-cost, high-volume technology. So I think you're seeing the beginnings of technologies that can be applied to a wider array of areas. And some of these could be new businesses. Some of these could be growing existing businesses with cost, with new technology. And others could be enhancing businesses. So in some sense, we have the ability, you know, if I'm still here, and the hope is I am, to be hit by a bus. I mean, you know, my goal, as I told you, I want to take silicon photonics to the mass market and take it everywhere. And you're seeing the beginnings of this technology. We just proved that we can do it. We now can take advantage of all the infrastructure that exists, all the investments in Moore's Law, and now really drive these technologies to the mass market and to all new arenas.
Right. And just one last question for you, just kind of along those lines. You know, you guys had, you told me before, a lot of people thought some of the stuff you're doing in the silicon photonics area would be kind of impossible, and then Intel's proven that it can kind of push the technology forward. You know, the guys that have these more exotic devices today, are you getting the sense now that they're becoming more convinced by the research that you guys are doing, and they're going to start swinging to produce similar kinds of devices, or is Intel really going at it alone here for the moment?
Well, so besides my wife, I think there was a lot of naysayers many years ago, and you know, this is sometimes you have to believe in what you're doing and then prove the skeptics. But you know, the activities with the collaboration with UC Santa Barbara is a perfect example. You know, John Bowers, who's a dear colleague now, we've worked together weekly. Is a 3.5 expert, Bell Labs, 20-year veteran, you know, working on these exotic materials and lasers. And, you know, I joke around that he's a convert, right? He believes silicon photonics now is the way to drive optical to the mass market. And what's happening in the industry, this is not about Intel. This is about enabling a technology in an industry. And slowly, more and more people are coming, let's call it, to the dark side. You know, the non-silicon people are starting to realize that, hey, there's something here. This is the way to go. The data now shows you can do it. And this is an exciting time because as more and more people come here, the government's putting significant investments, universities are putting significant activities in this space. You're starting to see some VC funding I think this is the way to drive silicon photonics into the industry. And so, you know, you prove the skeptics wrong, you prove you can do it, and now new people come in, more innovation happens. It's the same thing that happened with the planar transistor, right? Moving from the vacuum tubes.
Sure. Well, thank you very much.
My pleasure.